This is audible.
Ask and it is given, Learning to Manifest Your Desires. Written by Esther Hicks and Jerry Hicks. Narrated by Carl H. Martins. Words of praise for the teachings of Abraham and Ask and it is given. This is, plain and simple, one of the most powerful books I've ever read. One's entire life can change because of what is found here, and all given with such love. This book is a life treasure. Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God. I've been a huge fan of the teachings of Abraham for 10 years. They've helped me and my family tremendously. Christine Northrup, M.D., the author of Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. One of the most valuable things about Ask and It Is Given is that Abraham gives us 22 different powerful processes to achieve our goals. No matter where we are, there's a process that can make our lives better. I love this book, and I love Esther and Jerry Hicks. Louise L. Hay, the author of You Can Heal Your Life. This is a great book. My wife and I have enjoyed these profound and extremely practical Abraham teachings for several years. We trust that you will benefit as well. We recommend it to all our friends. John Gray, Ph.D., the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. A publishing milestone. You'll be fortunate to tap into the thinking of those who are permanently connected to source energy. Moreover, these voices of spirit speak in a language you'll understand and be able to instantly translate into action. They offer you no less than a blueprint for understanding and implementing your own destiny. Dr. Wayne W. Dyer, the author of The Power of Intention. The Abraham Hicks teachings have inspired me to a grand new level of clarity, confidence, purpose, and passion. I study these ideas constantly and recommend them to everyone I can. They are among the most powerful and transformational I have ever encountered. Live them, and your life will become new and brilliantly happy. Alan Cohen, the author of A Deep Breath of Life. These incredibly profound yet simple and practical teachings of Abraham will have you trusting your inner guidance again and will set you on course for the most uplifting adventures imaginable. Ask and It Is Given is the roadmap to self-upliftment and a joyous life. Jack Canfield, the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul series. This is one of the best books about manifestation that I've read in a long time. I appreciate how the book presents profound truths in such a down-to-earth way. The book's refreshing tone is supportive, loving, and completely positive. I'm giving away copies of Ask and It Is Given to everyone I know. I love and highly recommend this book. Doreen Virtue, Ph.D., the best-selling author of Angel Medicine. This book is dedicated to all of you who, in your desire for enlightenment and well-being, have asked the questions this book has answered, and to 3 delightful children of our children who are examples of what this book teaches, Laurel 5, Kevin 3, and Kate 2, who are not yet asking because they have not yet forgotten. And these teachings are especially dedicated to Louise Hay, whose desire to ask and learn and disseminate around this planet the principles of well-being has led her to ask us to create this comprehensive book of the teachings of Abraham. Foreword by Dr. Wayne W. Dyer, the best-selling author of The Power of Intention. Dedication. This book is dedicated to all of you who, in your desire for enlightenment and well-being, have asked the questions this book has answered, and to 3 delightful children of our children who are examples of what the book teaches, Laurel 5, Kevin 3, and Kate 2, who are not yet asking because they have not yet forgotten. And these teachings are especially dedicated to Louise Hay, whose desire to ask and learn and disseminate around this planet the principles of well-being has led her to ask us to create this comprehensive book of the teachings of Abraham. The book you're holding in your hands at this moment contains some of the most powerful teachings available to you on our planet today. I've been profoundly touched and influenced by the messages that Abraham offers here in this book and through the tapes that Esther and Jerry have been providing over the past 18 years. In fact, I'm deeply honored that Abraham has asked me to provide a brief foreword to this book, which I consider to be a publishing milestone. It is unique in all of publishing. You'll be fortunate to tap into the thinking of those who are permanently connected to source energy. Moreover, these voices of spirit speak in a language you'll understand and be able to instantly translate into action. They offer you no less than a blueprint for understanding and implementing your own destiny. My first thought is that if you're not yet ready to read and apply this great wisdom, then I urge you to simply carry this book with you for a few weeks. Allow the energy that it contains to permeate through any resistance that your mind-body might offer, and let it resonate with that inner place that is formless and boundaryless. This is what is often called your soul, but Abraham would call it your vibrational connection to your source. This is a universe of vibration. As Einstein once observed, nothing happens until something moves. That is, everything vibrates to a particular, measurable frequency. Break the solid world down to smaller and tinier components, and you see that what appears to be solid is a dance of particles and empty spaces. Go to the tiniest of these quantum particles, and you discover that it emanated from a source that vibrates so fast that it defies the world of beginnings and endings. This highest, fastest energy is called source energy. You and everyone and everything originated in this vibration and then moved into the world of things, bodies, minds, and egos. It was in the leaving of this source energy in our bodies, minds, that we took on our entire world of problems, illnesses, scarcities, and fears. The teachings of Abraham essentially are focused on helping you to return in all respects to that source from which all things originate and return to as well. This source energy has a look and feel to it that I've touched upon in my book, The Power of Intention. Abraham, however, can offer this enlightening wisdom to you by having the benefit of being 100% connected to that source and never ever doubting that connection. It's evident in every paragraph of this book. That's why I call this a publishing milestone. You're in direct, conscious contact with a cadre of honest, no-nonsense beings who have only your well-being in mind. They'll remind you that you came from source of well-being and that you can either summon higher vibrational energy to yourself and allow it to flow unimpeded in every aspect of your life, or you can resist it, and by doing so, stay disconnected from which is all-providing and all-loving. The message here is quite startling and yet oh so simple. You came from a source of love and well-being. When you're matched up to that energy of peace and love, you then regain the power of your source, that being the power to manifest your desires, to summon well-being, to attract abundance where scarcity previously resided, and to access divine guidance in the form of the right people and the precisely correct circumstances. This is what your source does, and since you emanated from that source, you can and will do the same. I've spent a full day with Abraham in person. I've dined with Esther and Jerry, and I've listened to hundreds of Abraham's recordings, so you can take it from me firsthand. You're about to embark on a life-changing journey offered to you by two of the most authentic and spiritually pure people I've ever encountered. Jerry and Esther Hicks are as much in awe of their role in bringing these teachings to you as I am in writing this foreword for Abraham. I encourage you to read these words carefully and apply them instantly. They summarize an observation I've offered for many years now. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. You're about to see and experience a whole new world of changing right before your eyes. This is the world created by a source energy that wants you to reconnect to it and live a life of joyful well-being. Thank you, Abraham, for allowing me to say a few words in this precious, precious book. I love you, all of you. Wayne. Preface by Jerry Hicks. Sunlight is beginning to spill across the Malibu coastline as I begin this preface, and the deep indigo tint of the Pacific Ocean at this time of morning seems to match the depth of pleasure I'm feeling as I'm imagining the value you are about to receive from the revelations within this book. Ask and It Is Given is certainly a book about our asking, being answered by all that is, but it's primarily about how whatever we're asking for is being given to us, and it's also the first book to ever, in such clear terminology, give us the simple practical formula for how to ask for, and then how to receive whatever we want to be, do, or have. Decades ago, while searching for plausible answers to my never-ending quest to know what it is all about, I discovered the word ineffable, meaning incapable of being expressed in words. Ineffable coincided with a conclusion I'd formed relative to it. I had decided that the closer we get to knowing the non-physical, the fewer words we have for clearly expressing it, and so any state of complete knowing would also therefore be in a state of ineffability. In other words, at this point in our time-space reality, the non-physical cannot be clearly expressed with physical words. Throughout physical history, we've evolved to, through, and into billions of philosophies, religions, opinions, and beliefs. Yet, with the billions upon billions of thinkers thinking, concluding, and passing their beliefs on to the next generations, we have not, at least not in any words we can agree on, found physical words to express the non-physical. Recorded history has retained some form of documentation of but a few of the many beings who have consciously communicated with non-physical intelligence. Some were revered, while some were damned by others. Most, however, who have been conscious of personal communication with the non-physical, perhaps in fear of being damned or even institutionalized, have decided to go and tell no one about their revelations. Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, Joan of Arc, Joseph Smith, to name but a few of those better known to the English-speaking world, were each outspoken recipients of non-physical intelligence, most of whom met with quite untimely and horrible physical ends. And so, although each of us is directly receiving some form of non-physical guidance, only a few receive blocks of non-physical thought that are clear enough to be translated into our physical words, and of those few, fewer still are willing to disclose their experience to others. I remind you of this information as a preface to what you're about to read, for my wife, Esther, is one of those rare persons who can, at will, relax her conscious mind enough to allow the reception of non-physical answers to whatever is asked. Somehow, Esther receives blocks of thought, not words, and just as a Spanish-English translator would hear a thought projected in Spanish words and then translate the thought, not the actual words, into English words, Esther instantly translates the non-physical thought into its closest physical English word equivalent. Please note that since there aren't always physical English words to perfectly express the non-physical thought that Esther receives, she sometimes forms new combinations of words, as well as using standard words in new ways. For example, capitalizing them when normally they would not be, in order to express new ways of looking at life. And for that reason, we've created a brief glossary at the back of this book in order to clarify our uncommon usage of some common words. In other words, there is the common term well-being, meaning the state of being happy, healthy, or prosperous. But the basis of Abraham's uncommon philosophy is translated into English as well-being. It's about the broader, universal, non-physical well-being that flows naturally to all of us, unless we do something to pinch it off. Also, within the text, we will initially put in quotation marks any coined words that you don't find in any dictionary, but whose meanings are obvious, such as overwhelmment or endedness. Since 1986, Esther and I have traveled to about 50 cities a year, presenting workshops, and any of the attendees can discuss or pose questions on whatever subject they want to talk about. No subjects are off limits. People have come by the thousands, from different ethnic groups, from different walks of life, from different philosophical backgrounds, all wanting to improve life in some way, either directly for themselves or indirectly by assisting others. And to those thousands who have asked for more, the answers have been given through Esther Hicks from Non-Physical Intelligence. And so, in response to the asking by those like you who want to know more, this philosophy of well-being has evolved into the creation of this book. At the heart of these teachings is the most powerful law of the universe, the law of attraction. Over the past decade, we've published much of Abraham's teachings in our quarterly journal, The Science of Deliberate Creation, which has highlighted the newest perspectives gleaned from questions posed by the attendees of our Art of Allowing workshops. As such, this philosophy is continually evolving as more of you bring to our attention your newest questions and perspectives. This book offers you a hands-on course in spiritual practicality. It's a how-to book in the broadest sense of the term, that is, how to be, do, or have anything that pleases you. This book also teaches you how not to be, do, or have anything that displeases you. Cherry. An Introduction to Abraham by Esther Hicks. She speaks with spirits, our friend said. She'll be here next week, and you can make an appointment with her and ask her anything you like. That's about the last thing on this earth that I would ever want to do, I thought. But at the same time, I heard Jerry, my husband, saying, we really would like to make an appointment. How do we go about doing that? That was in 1984, and in the 4 years that we'd been married, we'd never had an argument or even exchanged cross words. We were two joyous people living happily ever after with each other, and compatible on nearly every subject that came up. The only discomfort that I ever felt was when Jerry would entertain friends with one of his stories from 20 years earlier, relating his experience with the Ouija board. If we were at a restaurant or some other public place where I sensed one of those stories coming on, I would politely, or sometimes not so politely, excuse myself and retreat to the ladies' room, sit in the bar, or take a walk to the car until I believed that sufficient time had passed and the account would be over. Happily, Jerry eventually stopped telling those stories when I was around. I wasn't what you'd call a religious girl, but I attended enough Sunday school classes to develop very strong fear of evil and the devil. Thinking back, I'm not really sure if our Sunday school teachers had actually devoted a greater proportion of our classes to teaching us to fear the devil, or if that's simply what stood out in my mind. But that is, for the most part, what I remember from those years. So, as I'd been taught, I carefully avoided anything that could possibly have any connection to the devil. One time, when I was a young woman, I was sitting in a drive-in theater and happened to look out the back window of the car at the other movie screen and saw a horrible scene from The Exorcist, a movie that I'd purposely avoided seeing. And what I saw, without hearing the sound, affected me so strongly that I had nightmares for weeks. Her name is Sheila, our friend told Jerry. I'll make the appointment for you and let you know. Jerry spent the next few days writing down his questions. He said he had some that he'd saved up since he was a small child. I didn't make a list. Instead, I struggled with the idea of going at all. As we pulled into the driveway of a beautiful house in the heart of Phoenix, Arizona, I remember thinking, what am I getting myself into? We walked up to the front door, and a very nice woman greeted us and showed us into a lovely living room where we could wait for our scheduled appointment. The house was large, simply, but beautifully furnished, and very quiet. I remember feeling sort of a reverence, like being in a church. Then a door opened, and two pretty women dressed in fresh, brightly colored cotton blouses and skirts entered the room. Apparently, we were the first appointment after lunch. Both women looked happy and refreshed. I felt myself relax a little bit. Perhaps this wasn't going to be so weird after all. Soon we were invited into a lovely bedroom where three chairs were situated near the foot of the bed. Sheila was sitting on the edge of the bed, and her assistant sat in one of the chairs with a small tape recorder on the table beside her. Jerry and I sat in the other two chairs, and I braced myself for whatever was about to happen. The assistant explained that Sheila was going to relax and release her consciousness, and then Theo, a non-physical entity, would address us. When that happened, we'd be free to talk about anything we desired. Sheila lay across the end of the bed, only a few feet from where we were seated, and breathed deeply. Soon an unusual-sounding voice abruptly said, "It is the beginning, is it not? You have questions?" I looked at Jerry, hoping that he was ready to start, because I knew that I was not ready to talk with whoever was now speaking to us. Jerry leaned forward, as he was eager to ask his first question. I relaxed as Theo's words slowly came out of Sheila's mouth, and while I knew that it was Sheila's voice we were hearing, I somehow also knew that something far different from Sheila was the source of these marvelous answers. Jerry said he'd been saving his questions up since he was 5 years old, and he asked them as rapidly as he could. Our 30 minutes passed so quickly, but during that time, somehow, without my speaking a word, my fear of this strange experience lifted, and I was filled with a feeling of well-being that surpassed anything that I'd ever felt before. Once back inside our car, I told Jerry, "I'd really like to come back tomorrow. There are some things I would like to ask." Jerry was delighted to make another appointment, because he had more questions on his list as well. About halfway through our allotted time on the following day, Jerry reluctantly relinquished the remaining minutes to me, and I asked Theo, "How can we more effectively achieve our goals?" The answer came back, "Meditation and affirmations." The idea of meditation didn't appeal to me at all, and I wasn't aware of anyone who practiced it. In fact, when I thought of the word, it brought to mind people lying on beds of nails, walking on hot coals, standing on 1 foot for years, or begging for donations at the airport. So I asked, "What do you mean by meditation?" The answer was short, and the words felt good as I heard them. "Sit in a quiet room, wear comfortable clothing, and focus on your breathing. As your mind wanders, and it will, release the thought and focus upon your breathing. It would be good for you to do it together. It will be more powerful." "Could you give us an affirmation that would be of value for us to use?" we asked. "I, say your name, see and draw to me through divine love those beings who seek enlightenment through my process. The sharing will elevate us both now." As the words flowed from Sheila, Theo, I felt them penetrate to the core of my being. A feeling of love flowed to me and through me like nothing I'd ever felt before. My fear was gone. Jerry and I both felt wonderful. "Should we bring my daughter, Tracy, to meet you?" I asked.
"If it is her asking, but it is not necessary, for you two, Jerry and Esther, are channels."
That statement made no sense to me at all. I couldn't believe that I could be this old, in my 30s, and not already know something like that, if it were true. The tape recorder clicked off, and we both felt mild disappointment that our extraordinary experience was finished. Sheila's assistant asked if we had one last question. "Would you like to know the name of your spiritual guide?" she asked. I would never have asked that, for I had never heard the term spiritual guide, but it sounded like a good question. I liked the idea of guardian angels. So I said, "Yes, please, could you tell me the name of my spiritual guide?" Theo said,
"We are told it will be given to you directly. You will have a clairaudient experience, and you will know."
What is a clairaudient experience, I wondered. But before I could ask my question, Theo said with a tone of finality, "God's love unto you." And Sheila opened her eyes and sat up. Our extraordinary conversation with Theo had ended. After Jerry and I left the house, we drove to a lookout point on the side of one of the Phoenix Mountains and leaned against the car, staring off into the distance, watching the sunset. We had no idea of the transformation that had taken place within us that day. We only knew that we felt wonderful. When we returned home, I had two powerful new intentions. I was going to meditate, whatever in the world that meant, and I was going to find out the name of my spiritual guide. So we changed into our robes, closed the curtains in the living room, and sat in two large wing-back chairs with an étagère between us. We'd been encouraged to do this together, but it felt odd, and the étagère helped to mask the strangeness for some reason. I remembered Theo's instructions. Sit in a quiet room, wear comfortable clothing, and focus on your breathing. So we set a timer for 15 minutes, and I closed my eyes and began to breathe consciously. In my mind, I asked the question, "Who is my spiritual guide?" And then I counted my breath in and out, in and out. Right away, my entire body felt numb. I couldn't distinguish my nose from my toes. It was a strange but comforting sensation, and I enjoyed it. It felt as if my body was slowly spinning, even though I knew I was sitting in a chair. The timer rang and startled us, and I said, "Let's do it again." Once more, I closed my eyes, counted my breaths, and felt numb from head to toe. Again, the timer rang and startled us. "Let's do it again," I said. So we set the timer for another 15 minutes, and again I felt numbness overtake my entire body. But this time, something, or someone, began to breathe my body. From my vantage point, it felt like rapturous love moving from deep inside my body outward. What a glorious sensation! Jerry heard my soft sounds of pleasure and later said that to him, I appeared to be writhing in ecstasy. When the timer went off and I came out of the meditation, my teeth chattered like never before. Buzzed would have been a better word for the experience. For nearly an hour, my teeth buzzed as I tried to relax back into my normal state of awareness. At that time, I didn't realize what had happened, but I know now that I'd experienced my first contact with Abraham. While I didn't know what had happened, I did know that whatever it was good, and I wanted it to happen again. So Jerry and I made the decision to meditate every day for 15 minutes. I don't think we missed a day in the next 9 months. I felt the numbness or feeling of detachment each time, but nothing else extraordinary happened during our meditations. And then, right before Thanksgiving, 1985, while meditating, my head began to move gently from side to side. For the next few days, during meditation, my head would move in that gentle flowing motion. It was a lovely sensation that sort of felt like flying. And then, on about the third day of this new movement, during meditation, I realized that my head was not randomly moving about, but it was as if my nose was spelling letters in the air. M-N-O-P. Is what I realized it was. "Jerry," I shouted, "I'm spelling letters with my nose." And with those words, the rapturous feelings returned. Goosebumps covered my body from head to toe as this non-physical energy rippled through my body. Jerry quickly took out his notebook and began writing down the letters as my nose wrote them in the air. "I am Abraham. I am your spiritual guide." Abraham has since explained to us that there are many gathered there with them. They refer to themselves as the plural because they're a collective consciousness. They've explained that in the beginning, the words, "I am Abraham," were spoken through me only because my expectation for my spiritual guide was singular, but that there are many there with them, speaking, in a sense of the word, with one voice or a consensus of thought. To quote Abraham, "Abraham is not a singular consciousness as you feel that you are in your singular bodies. Abraham is a collective consciousness. There is a non-physical stream of consciousness, and as one of you asks a question, there are many, many points of consciousness that are funneling through what feels to be the one perspective because there is, in this case, one human, Esther, who is interpreting or articulating it. So it appears singular to you. We are multidimensional and multifaceted and certainly multi-consciousness." Abraham has since explained that they're not whispering words into my ears, which I am repeating for others, but instead they're offering blocks of thought like radio signals, which I'm receiving at some unconscious level. I then translate those blocks of thought into the physical word equivalent. I hear the words as they're spoken through me, but during the translation process itself, I have no awareness of what is coming or time for recollection of what has already come. Abraham explained that they have been offering these blocks of thought to me for quite some time, but I was so strictly trying to follow Theo's instructions, which said, when your mind wanders, and it will, release the thoughts and focus on your breathing, that whenever one of these thoughts would begin, I would release it as